Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
With the lawmaking session winding down, lawmakers are facing their final decisions on a number of important policy matters.
Again, this is a good compromise, and I appreciate the hard work of everyone involved.
Also tonight, some Florida lawmakers insist realtors' jobs make them especially vulnerable to attacks, and they deserve more protection.
They are making an appointment with you to assault, murder, or rob you.
We'll also learn the latest on whether or not the families of those who died at the old Dozier School for Boys will receive state compensation and listen into the debate on what happens to the online you when the real you leaves this mortal coil. I'm Tom Flanagan. We kick off week 7 in the Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Typically, during Florida's legislative season, Mondays are fairly light days at the Capitol. Things usually don't begin ramping up until noon because so many lawmakers have to travel from faraway home districts where they've spent the weekend. Today, with so many issues either passed, rejected outright, or approved in one chamber and hung up in the other, there wasn't a great deal of feverish activity in Tallahassee. Florida lawmakers, though, have a busy Tuesday coming up as 2016's regular session begins to wind down. Nick Evans has the story about what's coming up on the docket.
There's less than 3 weeks left in this year's legislative session, and while predictions of an early conclusion seem unlikely at this point, the finish line is just around the bend. This week, lawmakers expect to begin their budget conference, and committees are shuttering in earnest. It's getting late, the lights are coming on, and the proverbial legislative bartenders are clearing their throats for last call. But there are a few pieces of business left before the legislature closes up shop, 55 of them on the calendar in the House. So even if time is running short, lawmakers have a busy week ahead.
My problem with the bill is that based on a reading of the bill, there will be only one person in Florida history who will not be eligible to be considered by the committee, and that is General Edmund Kirby Smith.
That's Dean of the Florida Senate, Don Gates. The Niceville Republican is one of a handful of lawmakers pushing back on an effort to replace Florida's statue of Confederate General Edmund Kirby Smith in Washington, D.C.'s Statuary Hall.
And in the absence of a reason to take him out, and maybe there are good reasons to take him out, but we haven't heard it, in the absence of a reason to take him out, I think we have the cart before the horse here.
Gates argues singling out Smith is unfair. If the legislature wants to reconsider one of the state's submissions, it should consider both, and all names should be on the table. That approach is reflected in amendments tacked onto the House bill. Also on the calendar in the House is a guardianship measure aimed at stamping out elder abuse. Here's House sponsor Larry Ahern, a Republican from Seminole.
Some guardians take advantage of their wards, bleed their estates, and through excessive fees and expenses. In extreme cases, the wards are prevented from regaining their competency and remain, in effect, prisoners of their guardians.
Once they gain court approval, guardians can take complete control of their ward's finances and health decisions, sometimes taking actions over the objection of family members. Ahern's measure gives the state agency charged with regulating public guardians oversight authority in the private guardianship industry as well.
Members, we don't want to read another story about someone who's been appointed by the courts, been given complete autonomy over a person's life and estate, then uses that position to take advantage of the person they were entrusted to protect.
Meanwhile, the Senate is preparing to take up a public records measure that has raised concerns among government transparency advocates. Under current law, if an official or an organization that falls within sunshine provisions refuses to provide public records, you can take them to court. If you win, your court costs are covered. Critics say the system is too easily abused, but supporters say without court costs, it would be almost impossible to compel compliance. Miami Republican Senator Rene Garcia's proposal still directs the court to award attorney's fees, but it gives the judge enough room to deny funds for requests made in bad faith.
The amendment also provides that a court may not award attorney's fees if the public record request was made with the primary purpose of causing a violation of the public records laws.
Garcia's bill is slated for a Wednesday hearing with the full Senate. The House version has one panel left before the floor, and that committee meets Thursday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Well, just because we said there wasn't a lot going on at the Capitol today didn't mean there was nothing going on. Florida lawmakers are pushing to put more protections in place for real estate agents. Regan McCarthy reports a measure that's been moving in the House is getting its first hearing in the Senate today.
At least three real estate agents have been attacked in the past 6 months. That's according to Naples Republican Representative Kathleen Pasadomo.
There have been a string of nationwide attacks against and sexual assaults on realtors holding open houses, and some deaths have occurred.
Pasadomo has a bill she hopes will help to address that.
House Bill 3047 increases penalties by 1 degree for violent offenses committed against realtors while they are in the act of showing a property or conducting an open house.
The measure is awaiting a floor hearing in the House, but has been stagnant in the Senate until it got a committee hearing Monday. Venice Republican Senator Nancy Dietert is pushing the bill in that chamber. She says attacks on realtors are premeditated.
They are making an appointment with you to assault, murder, or rob you.
Dietert says realtors can be especially vulnerable.
It's the stalking aspect. It's the fact that it's mostly a female occupation. 70% of the crimes are against women. I think they're being stalked. They're being targeted. And we're going to kind of send a message that that's not the best niche market.
The measure would add real estate agents to a protected class that includes EMTs, sports officials, and the elderly. Despite concerns from lawmakers who worry about creating more crimes, the measure passed through the committee. Dietert says she hopes the bill will raise awareness about the issue. But with two more Senate committee stops to go, she says the measure faces a tough road this year. Meanwhile, lawmakers also considered legislation Monday that would put more rules in place for residential elevators. Sarasota Republican Representative Greg Stubbe says in-home elevators have been linked to a number of serious accidents involving children.
It's sad that a tragedy brought this to the forefront of what is necessary.
Stubbe tells the story of an elevator-related accident in his district.
In my district, there was a tragic situation where a young child went underneath an elevator and his father didn't know he was underneath the elevator. In Florida, you don't have to have those sensors, and the father didn't necessarily know that those were even available. If there was a sensor on the bottom of that elevator, today his son would still be alive, but unfortunately, there wasn't a sensor in their elevator in their house, and when he pushed the elevator to go down, he crushed his son, which was underneath the elevator.
Stubbe is pushing a bill that would require added safety precautions on any new residential elevators. The changes include sensors similar to those on most garage doors. The measure passed the House Government Operations Appropriation Committee Monday. It's awaiting a floor hearing in the Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as a Senate bill to help families impacted by the former Dozier school heads to the floor, its House companion may be encountering some resistance.
We have no idea when these behaviors that are alleged, it's just so difficult to apply the standards of today to behavior of the past.
In the digital world, privacy is a matter of life and death.
In the previous bill, the default provision was disclosure. However, in this bill, consent must be permitted before digital assets are disclosed.
And while the legislature may be moving to give utility companies a break on some of their construction expenses, there's concern it will be taxpayers who will pick up most of the tab.
All elected officials should be honest about the cost that comes with that expansion.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. abletrust.org.
Before we get back to state capitol happenings, let's dive into some Florida politics, specifically the U.S. Senate race. A packed house at the Tampa Convention Center this weekend gathered to hear the four Republican candidates for that race. As we hear from Steve Newborn at member station WUSF in Tampa, each one burnished their conservative credentials.
The four candidates were the main event at the Hillsboro Republican Party's Lincoln 2016 Red Ball. They're vying to succeed first-time Senator Marco Rubio, who's busy trying to succeed Barack Obama in the White House. The GOP candidates are Congressman David Jolly of Dunedin, Congressman Ron DeSantis of Ponte Vedra Beach, Lieutenant Governor Carlos Lopez Cantera of Miami, and businessman Todd Wilcox of Orlando. Congressman Ron DeSantis has represented the 6th Congressional District, which stretches from Jacksonville to Titusville, since 2012. He's a graduate of Harvard Law School and served as a judge advocate general in the Navy. He says President Obama has abused his authority with executive actions. Though the election for this spot means the winner wouldn't serve while Obama was in office, DeSantis says he wouldn't let the president name a new Supreme Court justice that would tip the balance in favor of the court's liberal wing.
So how tragic would it be if a president so dismissive of constitutional government succeeded in appointing the replacement for a justice like Antonin Scalia, who was so dedicated to defending our Constitution? We cannot let that happen.
Congressman David Jolly of Pinellas County won a special election to replace C.W. Bill Young in 2014. Jolly told the Tampa area Republicans he backs the concept of American exceptionalism. In particular, he vows to fight Russia's expansion in Ukraine, China's building of military bases on dredge islands in the South China Sea, and the efforts of ISIS in Syria. Jolly also attacked what he called the president's system of socialized medicine and failed leadership in Washington.
And I will pledge to you this, as a sitting member of Congress from this area and a candidate for the United States Senate, I will never resign over our Creator's sacred gift of freedom at the altar of big government. And nor will I resign over our national security, our homeland security, or our personal security to those who wish to take it from us.
Carlos Lopez Quintero was born in Spain to Cuban refugees before his family moved to Miami when he was a child. He served as House Majority Leader before being tapped by Florida Governor Rick Scott in 2014 to be his Lieutenant Governor. Lopez Quintero told the audience that if elected, he would limit himself to 2 terms in the U.S. Senate.
Too much government is a problem, but I honed special skills in the private sector, skills that have served me well in my time in government. A skill that I think is lacking in Washington, D.C. That special skill is common sense.
Todd Wilcox is the only non-politician of the GOP Senate candidates. He grew up in South Tampa, is a former Special Forces commander and CIA veteran, and is the founder of Patriot Defense Group, a defense contractor in Orlando. Wilcox says he's a strong candidate because he started 3 businesses, has boots-on-the-ground experience in both business and the military, and vows to represent a return-to-citizen government. And Wilcox wants to eliminate the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Labor Relations Board.
And it is not enough to continue to contribute to the echo chamber of all the white noise we hear about what's wrong in America. It is time that our leaders lead. It's time that we elect a warrior, not a lawyer.
Right now, most polls have Jolly with a commanding lead over DeSantis, with Lopez Quintero and Wilcox falling far behind. The U.S. Senate primary will be held August 30th, with the winner facing 1 of 3 Democrats who are also jockeying for Rubio's Senate seat. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
Bills seeking to compensate the families who want to rebury their loved ones found on the property of the now-closed Dozier School for Boys are continuing to move in both chambers of the Florida legislature. As Sasha Cordner reports, one bill is already headed to the Senate floor.
During Thursday's Senate Appropriations Committee hearing, Miami Gardens Democrat Oscar Brainin presented for bill sponsor Senate Democratic Leader Athenia Joyner.
This is the bill about the Arthur G. Dozier School for Boys, and we've all heard the story. This bill helps us to move forward.
The Dozier School for Boys in Marianna is surrounded by a history of alleged abuse and the site of the bodies of boys believed to have died from the alleged abuse. University of South Florida researchers found the remains of 51 people after excavating 55 unmarked graves on the Dozier grounds, and they've already identified 7 boys through DNA. Now the goal is to make sure those who have been matched with the remains have the proper funds to rebury their loved ones. Joyner's bill provides up to $7,500 to do just that. The bill also directs where the historical records and archives should be kept. In addition, the measure calls for the Dozier Task Force to create a memorial for the unclaimed remains and come up with the memorial's location. Brannon changed the measure to add to the task force's membership a group of alleged abuse survivors.
The amendment simply adds a member to the task force who will be appointed by the Commissioner of Agriculture. This member will represent the what was known as the White House Boys, the children who were the interests of the at-risk youth.
Former Senate President Don Gates of Niceville says this issue is important to him as it's in his district, and he says he hopes Joyner will entertain adding others to the task force as well as another change.
By the time this bill gets to the floor, I may have an amendment, which I hope will be a friendly amendment, that would provide that the land that is not set aside for memorial purposes, whatever that section of land might be, could be used by the community for civic or educational or economic development purposes.
Gates's idea may be a bit problematic because a final report given to the Florida Cabinet last month states there are areas of the property that are toxic. Still, after passing the committee unanimously, the measure is now slated to be taken up by the full Senate Tuesday. Meanwhile, the House bill encountered a bit of resistance during its second hearing. Winter Haven Republican Representative John Wood says he has some concerns.
Can you comment on the fact that the FDLE investigated all of the circumstances surrounding what could have transpired so many years ago at this school?
Back in 2009, the FDLE had found there was no criminal wrongdoing, but last year, Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam asked them to reopen the investigation. And an FDLE spokesman says that investigation is still ongoing. Meanwhile, there have been claims bills by Republicans and Democrats filed in the past that never went anywhere to compensate the alleged abuse survivors of Dozier. But Tampa Democratic Representative Edna Rain told Wood that's not the case with his bill. And he adds his goal is to give some measure of closure to the families to rebury their loved ones.
It would allow the state of Florida, basically, to allow these families to give a proper goodbye to their loved ones. I mean, when you consider that these folks, these families, sent their children away only to be told that those children ran away. Years later, we found out they didn't run away. They were actually dead for however it may have occurred, but they're buried on the property. All we're trying to do is to give those families a measure of respect and allow them to do the right thing and have a proper farewell.
But Wood didn't appear to be convinced by Narain's argument.
This school was there beginning in 1900. We have no idea when these behaviors that are alleged. It's just so difficult to apply the standards of today to behavior of the past. And so for that reason, I think when we start engaging in that type of activity, I get the emotion of what you talk about closure and all of these things going on. But we're really talking about a much different time, a very long time ago. And I'm not sure that this is a productive thing for our society.
But Miami Republican Representative Jeanette Nunez disagrees.
Quite frankly, I think right is right and wrong is wrong. And time and history doesn't change that. And so certainly the tragedies that occurred are wrong in today's standards, and they were wrong in those standards. So with that reason, I support this bill, and I urge everyone in this committee to do the same.
Still, the bill passed the House Appropriations Committee 22-1 with Wood opposed, and the House measure now has one more stop before heading to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
what happens to your digital life after death? The Florida legislature could address the question tomorrow. Two proposals pending in the House would allow online profiles to be amended after a person dies, but only if someone has granted their consent. Lynn Hatter has that story.
Bills by Republicans Senator Dorothy Hugel and Representative Jay Fant would allow a person before they die to designate someone to access their digital profiles like bank statements, emails, text messages. Hugel filed a similar bill last year. That version of the measure would have automatically granted access to the closest living relative, but it was opposed by organizations like Facebook and Google and even the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida. This year's plan explicitly requires a person's pre-approval, says Republican Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla.
This new and improved bill addresses those concerns while assuring that a person's digital assets are private unless disclosure is specifically and explicitly consented to.
And many of the same companies that once opposed the measure are now either in support or have at least dropped their opposition. Under a federal law, companies cannot give out electronic information without a warrant or consent. Jeff Menfack is a lawyer for AOL.
This bill solves for the problems that Yahoo, Facebook, and others, I was down here as well last year, that we had raised in connection with Senate Bill 102. It outlines a consent mechanism and one that's intuitive.
Well, Chairman, I did want to know whether Yahoo's in support of it as well.
That's Democratic Senator Darren Soto speaking to fellow Democrat Jeremy Ring, a former Yahoo executive.
I was thinking the same exact thing, but I actually, I don't want to speak for them, but since they didn't call me, I assume they're minimal neutral.
Senator Diaz de la Portilla says the proposal is heavily aimed at protecting privacy.
In the previous bill, the default provision was disclosure. However, in this bill, consent must be permitted before digital assets are disclosed.
The consent could come in the form of a will, trust, guardianship, power of attorney, or presented to the holder of the information in the form of an authorization form. The proposal is set for final passage. It could be heading to Governor Rick Scott's desk as soon as Tuesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Here's something that's probably happened to just about everyone who drives. You stop to get gas at a self-service station. You swipe your card, pump your gas, and then await a printed receipt that doesn't come. Instead, you get that annoying screen message to go inside and get the receipt from the attendant. Now, a North Florida Democratic state senator wanted to crack down on malfunctioning gas pump printers, but at the last minute, as we hear from Jim Ash, he decided on a more measured response.
On Monday morning, the pumps at the Circle K on Thomasville Road near Midtown were nearly deserted. And that was a good thing for Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services technician Jetter Jet Johnson. His strange-looking government truck, with three large translucent cylinders on the back, was moored to one pump with a short rubber hose. Johnson was making sure the pumps were delivering the right amount and grade of gas at the advertised price. He also tested the printers, although he said complaints are rare.
Not very frequently about receipts. We do get them, don't get me wrong, but we're not frequently, no.
The department is responsible for inspecting a little more than 9,000 gas stations and conducts 60,000 inspections a year, according to a legislative analysis. Johnson says the most common complaint about pumps from motorists is accuracy.
They're saying they got a certain amount of gas, size gas tank, and they pump this amount of gas, and their car don't hold that much gas.
A few hours later, Democratic Senator Bill Momford of Tallahassee appeared before the Senate Commerce and Tourism Committee with a different opinion and a bill that would force gas station owners to shut down a pump when its printer goes kaput. Momford told the panel he was hearing from elderly constituents who had to leave their cars and stand in line just to get a gas receipt. One constituent, Momford said, had to unbuckle grandchildren and march them through a driving rain. But he put his bill on hold at the last minute after industry lobbyists promised to look into the issue.
Again, I think it's something that needs to be addressed, but hopefully we'll see what happens over the next several months, and we can always come back next year with it.
Florida Retail Federation spokesman James Miller said his members didn't see the need for more direction from Tallahassee. Shutting down a pump is a big deal, especially for a mom-and-pop station, Miller says.
What does a small gas station owner do with one or two employees
and he's required to go out there and fix a printer. And not only that, but to shut down the pump that he relies on for his livelihood.
Jan Rubino, a retired administrative assistant for the now-defunct Department of Community Affairs, is scrupulous about collecting her receipts, even on the rare times she has to go see the attendant. But she wondered about the need for a new law.
I understand the situation for people who cannot get up to the main store, but I think it could be solved with something less than a statute, frankly.
Satisfied that he got his message across, Mumford apparently agrees. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, legislation is heading to the House floor that would give Florida utilities a break from some construction costs. But as Ashley Tressel reports, critics claim it could end up costing taxpayers more.
Under current law, utility companies pay to relocate utility lines out of public construction areas. But bills in the House and Senate would place the burden on local governments. Megan Surjane Samples of the Florida League of Cities says the bill would unfairly transfer costs to taxpayers. She uses herself as an example.
I don't have cable or a landline at my house, so why am I going to have to pay to relocate equipment that I don't even use, I'm not even a benefactor of?
She says local governments have told her they could have to increase property taxes to pay for relocations, since they're not included in the budget. But bill sponsor Senator Anna Terry Flores says cities are getting the benefits of growth without having to pay the costs.
And I think that our locally elected officials, just the same way as statewide elected officials, as all elected officials, should be honest about the cost that comes with that expansion. And it's very easy to say, well, there's not really a cost because some other person's going to pay for it. It's going to be buried in your utility bill or in your electric bill, your water bill, whatever it is.
The Senate bill has already passed the floor. The House will take up the proposal Tuesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ashley Tressel.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Ashley Tressel and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.